to Anna Henderson in Canberra. Anna, political editor, SBS World News. Anna, welcome to Late Night Live.
David, it's a pleasure. I can't let you promote me that much, though, because I am just a mere chief political correspondent. But one day, political editors may beckon for me.
I think I'm always looking to the future, Anna. It's part of it's part of what they value around here. On the other hand, I make the odd mistake. You are everything you should be and more. Anna, the line in Canberra seems to be, from many ministers, this will be a difficult time.
Yeah. I think as I walked around the building today, got my steps up today, David, I think I would have done at least 10,000.
Over those polished floors.
You know, Tony Abbott used to do internal runs in Parliament House and he'd get, you know, 5Ks up as he whizzed around. As I was walking around the building today and speaking to people, it was a real sense of discombobulation and just the sense that people are kind of shell-shocked that things have moved so dramatically and that a lot of people who have a bit more knowledge about, you know, politics in the Middle East or who've got a background where they've actually studied it or looked at it more deeply or been a diplomat or worked overseas know that this now is really out of the control of the United States and the domino effect of what might now occur across the region is really not something that is in the control of the Western allies who have sort of backed the United States and Israel on this initial attack on Iran. So while I think there was a sense that there was an understanding that action was being taken and that the government was supporting it and the opposition is certainly supporting it as well, it's confronting for people and it's concerning for those who've lived through previous wars that Australia has involved itself in alongside the US, because a lot of people were saying to me, you know, we have seen this movie before and at what stage does the Parliament get to have some say in what Australia may or may not do next?
Reading their eyes as much as their words, I got the sense following it today that the government was sort of saying, we don't really know what's going on.
And it's hard to know where the truth lies because people were picking their words so very carefully, weren't they? But I think it is quite clear that, you know, Australia isn't, as the Prime Minister describes it, a major player in all of this. We're not, you know, a seat at the inner sanctum of decision-making on matters of this nature, and we're not sending our overt military forces in to be involved in any of the action that's taking place. We're not even providing refueling aircraft. We're not even providing any kind of radiating forces that are actually engaged in what's going on. But what Australia is sort of, what's known is that Australia does have intelligence assets in the region, that we obviously have our diplomats in the region. And we do have these joint facilities in Australia, like Pine Gap, where the detail of what occurs there, what intelligence is collected, what is shared between Australia and the US and potentially with Five Eyes partners beyond that, and potentially with Israel as well, is entirely unclear. And that the government has always defended that lack of clarity by saying that, you know, asking it to divulge its intelligence on that level would be inappropriate, that that's where they draw the line on what the public needs to know.
Yeah. Is there, do you sense, any worry in the government about the evident breakdown of international law that this attack is evidence of?
What I have got a flavour of and what I've reported tonight on SBS as well is that there is a fairly quiet acknowledgement within Australian politics, within the government, amongst ministers who are aware and a part of conversations around this, that the rules-based order, as we call it, you know, United Nations conventions and these sort of international democratic frameworks that we've relied upon and have broken down before, certainly, and different governments have had justifications for why they've gone against what they previously agreed to. But that the kind of international rules-based order, as we have known it for some time, is essentially in a a state of suspension at the moment, because for at least the last year, but certainly during Donald Trump's second presidency, and it's not just the Trump administration, but other countries that we are naturally allied to, those frameworks, those expectations that, you know, very esteemed legal experts around the world have always held up as what democratic nations should adhere to, that there haven't really been the test for countries to meet over the last year or so. And that's really confronting if you think about what that means going forward, you know, whether or not it is okay if you don't like the leadership of another country or if you think they're dangerous to actually take out the leader of that country. Is that going to fit into what we say is the actions of democratic countries? So they're big topics to grapple with, and they haven't been without precedent to grapple with before. But I think what's happened over the last couple of days has been confirmation that the US and Israel can take this action, and the Ayatollah Khamenei is gone, and a country like Australia would say we support the US and Israel in ensuring that there's no nuclear capability from Iran and that Iran has been a bad actor in the world.
Is the ground rule in Canberra that the government cannot criticise Trump? Are you aware of any criticism of Trump that's ever been made by the Prime Minister or a minister?
Since his election, because the Prime Minister's on record of having said
very unflattering things in the past.
Yes.
But since Trump returned to the White House, has an Australian leader criticised him?
But I just don't think that's how this government looks at how to navigate this period in the world. It's not about, well, we hear these kinds of, you know, there's quiet diplomacy and there's loud diplomacy and there's keeping everything working for Australia in terms of the trading relationships, in terms of the human relationships, in terms of the alliances that we rely upon for our defence and security. And, you know, the way it's described to me by people far more sort of eminent than me in the world of diplomacy is there's nothing to be gained from criticising the Trump administration publicly, because it's sort of Teflon Trump in some ways. It doesn't impact on his decision-making. It's not going to change his mind. And so the best way, I think the government has taken this decision, and many others I speak to who are not in government but who follow, you know, how the world works, is to instead find ways to remain in dialogue, remain in the conversation, and then in a private setting to raise things that are uncomfortable. And I believe that that has happened with Israel, and the Prime Minister has done that in relation to Israel. I understand that there has been some, we know the Prime Minister has been quite open in the past in being critical of the Netanyahu government's decisions around Gaza. But I think there is a sense that it would not help Australia's case economically or in terms of its security to have an outward posture of criticism of the Trump administration right now.
You mentioned Israel, the West Bank. Has Australia made its position clear on the increasing activity of seizure of land on the West Bank?
I think Penny Wong has been pretty clear. The Prime Minister probably hasn't been asked as many times, but the Foreign Minister has made clear her unhappiness with the settlements and the actions in the West Bank. And we've seen multiple very crafted statements come from her office to raise concerns. I would expect that there have been also discussions around that relayed in private conversations as well, given they're out there on the public record too. And so you've also got the reality of some targeted sanctions that relate to some of the proponents of the settlements. So I think the answer is at this stage that there is qualified criticism and that the government's also aware that it has been pretty vocal pre the Bondi terror attack when you had that kind of unfolding situation in Gaza, the war and the conflict and the, you know, aggressive way that Israel has been conducting its sort of punishments in Gaza, that the government has been pretty full-throated in saying that, you know, they had a big problem with how the Netanyahu government has been operating, and very critical to the point where the relationship between, you know, Canberra and the Israeli government has been extremely strained at times. And, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu's voiced his great disappointment that Australia hasn't been more supportive.
Look, I don't ask this entirely as a joke, though I've got to confess there's an element of it. Where does Pauline stand on Operation Epic Fury? Is she backing it?
Well, we haven't heard a lot from Pauline Hanson over the last couple of days in terms of finding out where her position is. But this is an increasingly valid question, and we should know how she intends to respond on some of these global issues, because, you know, as we're seeing in the polls, her popularity base is only strengthening at the moment, according to, you know, multiple polls, which we can put together in a trend. It's no secret that Pauline Hanson sees a lot that she likes about the Trump administration and sees this international movement of more conservative disruptors, and she put herself alongside Nigel Farage and Donald Trump in that, as potentially being the change that she argues a lot of people who are unhappy with their countries need. And that includes very strong action when it comes to cracking down on adversaries and dangers that could be posed. Pauline Hanson is also someone who doesn't agree with a lot of the international structures that Donald Trump has railed against, which come out of United Nations frameworks and other sort of international bodies that work in tandem. She doesn't agree with them, and she doesn't want Australia to be a signatory to them. So while I would love to ask Pauline Hanson directly to understand more of her position, I think that at the moment she's far more focused on what's happening in Syria with the Australian citizens who are still in a detention camp there, who are linked to IS, than she is about what's happening with Iran.
Have we heard anything from the National Party about the shipments of lamb? Now, you know about the shipments of lamb, don't you? Boats full of sheep are having to turn back to Australia because they can't deliver sheep to the Middle East at the moment. Are you aware of this?
You know, in the course of today, that has not come up, and I have had multiple conversations with members of the National Party who've been largely trying to raise the plight, for example, of the Yazidi people who don't want to see those 34 women and children linked to Islamic State come back to Australia. So it hasn't been front of mind for me, and it hasn't been something that has made its way to the top of the agenda. But there, you know, the implications of what's happening in the Middle East, in the sort of fallout from the initial strikes, it will touch so many Australian industries. It will touch the Australian economy in ways that we are still yet to see unfold. If it is protracted, if it does go on for 4 weeks or more. And so it wouldn't surprise me that the Nationals will eventually get to that point. But right now, I think today for the Nationals federally was really about trying to keep the band together. It was Angus Taylor's first day at the dispatch box as opposition leader, and it was very much about trying to kind of keep the focus on holding the government's feet to the fire where possible on policy fronts. Don't think it quite turned out the way they expected it to, because there's so much focus on international affairs, and that's an area where they're pretty much in lockstep with the government on a position. But David, why don't I investigate that for next week?
Anna, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
David, it's a pleasure. It's a very precarious and momentous time, and it's been good to chat to you and tell you a bit more about how it's all unfolding here.
Anna, earlier I made a complete mangle of your titles at SBS, and I'm wondering if I can publicly propose to you now a fresh title, this time from Late Night Live.
Oh, wow.
Will you
Please continue.
Will you be Chief Political Correspondent, Canberra, for Late Night Live?
Well, David, I'm chief political correspondent for SBS World News, but I'm very happy to spend this time with you on a Monday night and add what I can to the conversation.
I'll take that to be a yes. And Anna, thanks. I'm looking forward to weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks more of this. We value your contribution very much on Late Night Live.
Well, it's a pleasure, David. Thanks for your time.